It's in Shandong Province, which is northeastern China. It's a coastal province. It's really across the Yellow Sea from Japan. Nagaki. Check this out. There are three things I would definitely like to include in this interview, if I can, Art. I think really of interest is Liberation Day. In other words, the day we first met Tad Nagaki. The Liberation Day, August 17, 1945. That's really important. And then my search for the heroes, where in my grown-up time, looking to find out who these American heroes were, and he was the first of the American Liberation Team that I tracked down and found in 1997 in a national search. So he was my very first one, and that I kept closer touch with him than anyone else. And obviously, I think important for this story is the Japanese-American experience, which I didn't know anything about as a child, but I sure did learn it when I started talking to Tad Nagaki over quite a few years, just chatting with him on the telephone. So those three things I would like to hope we can get in on this discussion.
Let's start then in the order you gave them. Tell me about Liberation Day and your first what Tad Nagaki was doing on that day and how you met him and everything.
I will never forget that day. I was 12 years old. It was a hot, windy day. And I'd been a prisoner of the Japanese in this concentration camp for 3 years. I had not seen my parents for 5.5 years. And I heard an airplane. And I rushed to look out the barracks window. And I saw this huge American plane. It had an American star on the belly of the plane coming low over the treetops. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And I thought, this must be Americans. Because as I watched, the belly of the plane opened and out dropped these 7 parachutes out into the fields beyond the barrier wall. Well, believe me, I had been lying on the steamer trunks having dysentery and an upset stomach, and it was instant cure for my diarrhea. I dashed for the gates of the camp, thinking I'd be the first person there to welcome these people that were dropping out of the skies to rescue us. And here, out of 1,500 prisoners, probably 1,499 got there before I did. Everyone was berserk. I mean, out of their minds, pandemonium, people laughing, weeping, dancing, pounding on the earth, jumping up and down and pounding the skies with their fists, waving at this American flag. And we were just a tidal wave of joy, just pushing out, just children, hundreds of people pushing out into the past the barrier walls into the fields where these Americans had dropped down into the fields beyond the barrier wall. And we welcomed them into the camp. Oh, bless my soul. We children followed them every place they went, where they ate, where they went, I guess, to the toilets. Every place we followed them around. We children wanted to touch their hair. We wanted to pat their faces. We wanted souvenirs. We wanted their autographs, their buttons, their insignia. Tad Nagaki told me one lady cut up a piece of his hair so she could have it for a souvenir. And we just, it was like we were free. This was hope. They were going to bring us back together with our parents. It was a day that I will never, never forget.
Wow. What a story. What a story. And what, probably it was a lot later, you got to be friends with Mr. Nagaki. And tell me about what you know about his upbringing and his experience as a Japanese-American.
First, let me just tell one other little bit about him in the concentration camp. He was the Japanese language interpreter in the rescue team. And we children just followed him around. He had been an athlete, a high school standout athlete star in his Nebraska hometown. Football, track, baseball. And when we had a tiny little ball field and We recruited Tad Nagaki and a couple of the other Americans to play with the American team of softball against the British. And Tad Nagaki was really the star because he was the best catcher you could even imagine. And he was an American catcher playing with his boots on in this concentration camp. We children followed that man every place. Tad Nagaki had a trail of children as though he were the Pied Piper. When I got acquainted with Tad, I began asking him questions because in my grown-up years when I tracked him down, I was now beginning to try to find out, well, exactly what is an American hero? And when I went on a national search to look for all of these six Americans who had liberated the camp, I started asking them questions about themselves. I discovered that American heroes, each one is unique. Tad Nagaki was a gentle, quiet farmer from Nebraska when I talked to him. And I would ask him questions. And through years of asking questions and pulling facts out from him, I found out the Tad Nagaki story. And it is a story of Japanese Americans during World War II, and it isn't always a pretty picture. He said he had been recruited for the military before Pearl Harbor and was in Fort Monmouth, New Jersey. He wanted to be an airman. And then Pearl Harbor was attacked. And all of a sudden, every American could tell you where he or she was the day Pearl Harbor was attacked. And if Americans were angry and terrified, the Japanese were just frozen with terror. The Japanese Americans were frozen with terror because all of a sudden Americans couldn't trust the Japanese Americans. And they took away the Rose Bowl game from Pasadena for fear of an air raid against it. After all these thousands of people had been killed or wounded, 4,600 more than that killed or wounded in Pearl Harbor. And how could we trust the Japanese? And all of a sudden, Tad Nagaki, when he asked if he could be an airman, he got a letter from his commander in Fort Monmouth that said, no, you could not be an airman because he was Japanese American. And shortly thereafter, he was shipped with many other Japanese-American soldiers to a base in Kentucky, where all of a sudden, instead of doing gung-ho, red-blooded American stuff and going to war, he was doing what was stupid stuff. He was loading trains, and he was landscaping grounds and pruning trees. And he wanted to go and fight like every other red-blooded American, he told me. And He just said that was not what he wanted to do. He said, my mother had a blue star in her door at home that said she was proud. She had a son. She had more than one son serving America. And I began asking him questions about this. And he said, we kept asking them, What could we do? How could we get to be in a combat unit? And they kept being turned down. I want to be in combat. And they kept being turned down. 2 years. They did stupid stuff. And finally, there was an intelligence request. We need people in espionage and intelligence who can speak Japanese. We need them to help us in the war effort.
I hate to just move away from the mic a little bit. I'm starting to hear... Maybe you can't hear in the headphones. Just don't be quite as close. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No,
keep
back.
Going. Go back to the intelligence service. You are terrific. Keep going.
Finally, the Americans woke up in the intelligence service and said, we desperately need people who can speak Japanese behind enemy lines in intelligence and spy work. And so after 2 years of cooling his heels in this with a group of Japanese Americans in Kentucky, all of a sudden, there's a posting on the bulletin board that the Office of Strategic Services, the OSS, was looking for an elite team of Japanese Americans to work behind Japanese lines. Tad Nagaki signed up so fast. There were hundreds of volunteers. These people begged. They wanted to be part of America's war effort, not doing stupid stuff. He signed up, and out of the hundreds, Tad Nagaki was selected of one of 14 who were chosen and ended up in the China-Burma-India Theater of Operation with the OSS Unit 101, the very first unit to function behind Japanese lines. And at first he was assigned in Burma and then later in China. Well, I began to think about this, so I had some questions to ask him. And the amazing thing was I couldn't get him to tell me. I expected certain answers, and I couldn't get him to tell me. I said to him, well, didn't you know that as an ethnic Japanese, if the Japanese caught you in 1945, you would be the first they would torture and you would kill? And I said, didn't you know that the most ghastly interrogation techniques would come first when they got you? And didn't you know, and yes, of course he did, the ritual executions of Americans would follow, executions by, bless my soul, beheading. I still get goosebumps thinking about it. And I said, and in Burma and in China, what if the American soldiers thought you were the Japanese enemy and would kill you because they thought you were a Japanese? And he said, I didn't give it any thought. He kept saying to me, I am American. He didn't ever talk very much. He said, I am American. And then he said, in war, if you're going to think about that, you're not going to be a very good soldier. He had been born in America, in Nebraska, so he was an American citizen. He arrived in this team as an experiment. Could you trust Japanese Americans to fight against the Japanese?
And that's not something they would have asked of German Americans or Italian Americans, of course.
Well, America was filled with such horror that the big signs along the Burma Shave signs were all saying, slap the Jap. And people had posters every place, remember Pearl Harbor. And of course, the Japanese Americans were being put in internment camps on the West Coast. And so you can understand this experiment. Could you trust Japanese Americans to fight the Japanese? And I just have to say an important part about this experiment. When America, this land of immigrants, finally trusted its Japanese Americans, it reaped the benefit of unspeakable heroism. Tad Nagaki was an American hero, and I can never say enough thank yous. I tried to pull out of him anything that made him say America was doing the wrong thing. He would never say it. He just kept saying he was American. And it was given when I signed up to be in the military. It was a given. You are going to fight for your country. I never thought anything different from that. I could never pull one word of criticism out. And he even was engaged to a Japanese-American girl whose parents were in the Poston internment camp in Arizona.
Incredible story. I have, for the benefit of the historic record, you may go on at length in any other details. What you've provided me with is more than adequate for what I need to put on the air on that day. And I must say, New Jersey Assembly really lost. I can't believe you were never elected governor for your enthusiasm.
Can I say this? I am a happy retiree. I'm looking over to see. There is a piece I left out about the Japanese experience that I think
it's all
is
yours. The floor is all yours.
I think important to say when I was talking about the Japanese experience, the Americans after Pearl Harbor was attacked by the Japanese, the American Selective Service System classified the Nisei as enemy aliens not subject to military service. And that was when Japanese Americans were rounded, military men were rounded up and put in separate places from other American people in the military. I'm seeing if what other things. I just want to be. I do want to.
And remember, we're going to focus the whole experience. You've given us more than enough to give us the schematic of what occurred with Japanese Americans. Anything personal else about Tad Nagaki? Because this is really a remembrance of. We're trying to focus a little bit on him in any other ways. Was he recognized for what he did within his Oklahoma community? Did they?
No. When I went tracking him down, nobody seemed to know that Tad Nagaki was a hero. I even went to his 90th birthday in 2010. His grandsons had invited me to come with a town-wide celebration to honor him. Nobody knew this man was a hero. Here we had letters from around the world that I had asked people, former Weishian prisoners from around the world, to send letters to the editor about what they remembered of Tad Nagaki and Liberation Day. And all around the country club room where this gathering was were these letters from all around the world, people remembering Tad Nagaki and Liberation Day. And all these neighbors and friends and even family members were just shaking their heads in disbelief. This quiet farmer was an American hero, and they'd been rubbing shoulders with this man for 50 years and had no idea for it. In fact, he was so afraid that I was someday going to make a big fuss and embarrass him publicly. He would call me on the one time he called me on the phone. I don't know what made him think that I was going to make a fuss. Well, I had made a fuss when I found all the other heroes and got their names in the paper and said, "You have an American hero in your town." And this is what he did, August 17, 1945. And Tad Nagaki was so afraid that I was going to make a fuss over him. But on this beautiful birthday celebration, I asked his grandsons if I could stand in front of the microphone and tell the Tad Nagaki story of an American hero. And he sat there so close I could reach over and just pat him while I told this story. And I told the story all about how he had been set aside as a Japanese American because of his ethnicity, and what he had done, jumped out of a plane at 400 feet into a place which could have been a wasp's nest of terror and gunshots, with the Japanese aiming at him to rescue 1,500 prisoners, people he didn't even know. Well, I wasn't the only one weeping that day when people found out about this American hero that has been living with them all those years. And you know what? We can never take our heroes like this for granted. And God bless him. I can never say enough thank yous to this man.
Mary, thank you so much. And we will make a fuss about him on the air. Unfortunately, he won't be here to hear it.
If I can let his grandsons know about it, actually, they live around the Denver area. So, Art, if you're able to tell me what the radio stations are, that would be helpful to me, so I can specifically, his sons, his wife, I never met his son, never met his wife. They were dead when I first found Tad. And I would be really pleased if I could let his grandsons know where and when. And are you still on with the May 31st date?
Yes, that is the date it's going to run. I'll get you more. Closer we get to the date, the more specific information I'll have.
Excellent.
Now, you want a recording of everything you said here, even though I may only use, a certain percentage.
That would be great, because I think the Weishian website would, the former prisoner in the camp that created the Weishian website would be delighted with the whole transcript. But he can also post the actual broadcast
from
NPR.
Yeah, they could link
NPR.
To it.
NPR oh, just link to it.
NPR.org. Would encourage it.
Oh, okay.
Well, we'll give you something more specific. We'll actually link to the very, very story. And they're going to, I believe, did we already, you sent a photograph? Yes, of course you did.
I sent you several photographs.
They're going to build a whole, they're going to not only have it on the radio, they're going to have a page, a web page.
Oh, excellent.
So that's, that will have the sound, that will have everything.
Well, I might be able to send you a couple more pictures. For example, if I'm very technically challenged. I'm not very good at computer stuff.
So I think we have enough.
You got enough. I think I sent you three pictures. A picture.
They're not going to use more than that.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah, no. So don't worry about that. Now, when I send you the sound of everything you said here, do you want me to cut out the pauses and
clean it
up?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Fine. Yep, that's fine.
All right.
Fine. You're the technical expert. By the way, are you going to be the person doing the speaking?
No, it will be the host of the program that day. I will write it and shape it and maybe call you back if I have any questions. But in the end, it will be one of our program hosts. I'm not sure who's hosting that day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I hope I covered all the things that I wanted to and that you needed me to do.
Well, and if there's any little thing you wanted me to put in that I don't see in your article and what you said, there's also possible just to put it in the text that gets read.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we have everything. We have his age.
He was 25 the day he liberated the camp, and he died at the age of 93. Died in April at the age of 93.
Okay. Well, I have everything, and the line's going to cut off here at the bottom of this half hour. And I want to thank you. I want to thank WHYY for making this possible.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Keep in touch. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.